There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa. It is the Cheeseboard Show on the Thursday brunch as we celebrate the food that is so seductive and so addictive. We'll be exploring the greatest cheeses from around the world, from the salty to the creamy, the hard to the soft. It's all about the food that you can pretty much eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner and dessert. Joining me at the table are Roger Longman, artisan cheesemaker at White Lake Cheese and officially the maker of the best goat's milk cheese in the world. Oliver Sutton, yeah, you can laugh, but it's true. Oliver Sutton, retail manager and cheesemonger at Jones the Grocer, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Dairy Organic Farm. Get on our Dubai Eye Facebook and Instagram pages and follow all the food action live in the studio. Joe will be filming throughout the show and we want to hear from you as well. Which cheeses get your taste buds going? How do you like to eat them? But it is time to meet the panel. And Oliver Sutton has joined Jones the Grocer's team back in September as retail manager and cheesemonger, having always been interested in food. He first trained as a chef and then transitioned into food distribution. But Oliver has worked for over a decade in this area and has focused heavily on cheese sales and the distribution in both the UK and in Singapore, but now here in Dubai also. Welcome to the Thursday brunch, Oliver.
Thank you very much.
Oh, let's turn you on. There you go. Hello.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. Always nice to be turned on.
And our next two guests, in fact, all of you know each other through this one particular guest. So based in the heart of Cheddar Country, White Lake Cheese was established in 2004 by Peter Humphreys and Roger Longman. And over a decade later, they're famed for their extraordinary range of goats, sheep's and cow's milk cheeses, officially the maker of the best goat's milk cheese in the world for 2017. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here today.
Great to have you with us here in Dubai. And last but not least, Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Dairy Organic Farm and a student of Roger's. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you. Now, Roger, congratulations are in order because about a month ago, in fact, the World Cheese Awards happened for 2017. Not only did you win for the best goat's cheese, but White Lake won for the best specialist cheesemaker as well.
Yeah, so the best specialist cheesemaker was actually at the British Cheese Awards back in the summer. Mm-hmm. So, and we also won Supreme Champion at that as well for a sheep's cheese. So yeah, we've had a very good year awards-wise.
It's just, it's amazing. So congratulations, well done. Tell us a bit more about White Lake cheese. It is just off the Glastonbury, in fact.
It is, yeah. So I'm in Somerset. I'm third generation farmer from Somerset. My parents and grandparents used to make cheddar. I wanted to do something different, so I started milking goats and set up a partnership with another great cheesemaker called Peter Humphreys. And slowly learned how to make goat's cheeses, but goat's cheese is sort of more modern goat's cheese than people are used to. A lot of people think goat's cheese is going to be quite strong and potent, but it doesn't have to be. One of our big advantages is we farm our own goats, so we have complete control over the milk and what they eat and stuff like that, and has a massive effect on the quality of the cheese, so that's a big help for us, definitely.
You've got Toggenburg, British Alpine and Sarnen goats, is that right?
Yeah, so they're all, none of them are purebreds, they're all sort of crossbred, because we are driven by, we want protein in the milk rather than pure litres of milk. So, and we also now have some French Alpines, which are very good for, gives us more of a goaty flavour to the milk. So that's going to be an interesting change over the next few years.
They're fed a very special diet as well to make sure that you get that the milk that you want.
Yeah. I mean, we feed hay made from the meadows on the Somerset Levels, which is, you know, full of all sorts of interesting plants and things like that. And goats will try and eat, you know, they will nibble at anything. They won't always eat everything. They're quite fussy about what to eat, but they love to chew everything and play with stuff. So they like interesting forages rather than just plain bland grass.
Well, you've got some of the world's best at goat's cheese, but that's how you actually got into making goat's cheese, Carla, as we heard last time. And it was through, in fact, meeting Roger.
Yep. I got introduced to Roger I've always been into food, but found Roger, went to live in Somerset for a little bit, and got schooled. Yeah, really well.
No looking back after
no looking
that.
Back.
But
no.
It must be very different because you make the goat's cheese locally here.
Yes.
So this would be quite different, wouldn't it, Roger? Because obviously the sourcing of the animal, the sourcing of that milk would make a difference, would it not, to...
Yeah, it's a massive difference. But you still need the skill of a cheesemaker, and, you know, luckily Carla really has a passion for it, and it's one of those things. It's not actually that difficult to make cheese, but to make cheese well and consistently is really hard, and Carla's really got that down to a T now, I think.
Yeah.
I love coming out here and trying all her new cheeses she's got. It's very exciting.
Yeah, she's shaking her head, but there you go. It's
a lot to learn still. Yeah,
I mean, because you've been doing it for a year now, haven't you?
Yeah.
How long does it take to become a master cheesemaker, Roger?
I don't know. I'll tell you when I am one.
You've won the awards, but you also judge competitions as well.
I do. Yeah. So we have the British Cheese Awards is right next door to my farm. So I was judging at that. I also judged at the Global Cheese Awards last year as well. And it's hard judging cheese because I'm looking for certain things in particular cheeses that I think should be there. And cheese making has changed a lot, but although my cheese is quite modern, to me cheddar should be quite a traditional type of cheese, and I find a lot of modern cheddars far too sweet, to be honest. You get a you get a taste of cheese and then it disappears, where if you get a proper, you know, cheese like Montgomery's or Westcombe, that flavour lasts for a long time, but that's why they cost more money, because that's what you're paying for. It's the same as wine, really, isn't it?
Well, cheddar should come from Somerset.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get on my high horse. We're West Country boys,
absolutely,
aren't we?
Yeah.
And cheddar should come from the British, English West Country.
Yeah.
There is the land, again, that we've alluded to earlier. All of these things impart flavours into the milk. There's a traditional way of making these things, the sweetness that you've talked about, and people use various things in their cheese to cover up bad tastes, etc. So, yeah, I always think, you know, you've got to look at provenance as much as anything else when you're selecting, and you should be asking those questions of the cheesemonger.
It is very much about the source. It is about where it comes from, the way that it is made, the way that it's aged. But it's quite a science, isn't it? It is quite a science, but it's also about the heritage.
It's a science and it's an art. There is a lot of science in it, and I'm still learning a lot of that, but there is still a tremendous amount of art to it, and it's down to the individual. It's like with chefs, you can give them the same ingredients, the same recipe, and you'll end up with meals that taste very different because you've got that skill of the maker or the chef changing it, and that's what I find so exciting about it.
Why do we love cheese so much? Why do you think it is that it's something that everybody loves? Everybody has a favorite cheese. There's something comforting about it. There is something... What is it?
Instant gratification.
Yes.
This is true.
I think it's, there are not many foods that you can go home, just unwrap and dive into. And the great, great thing about cheese for me is, you know, we've got essentially, three, four simple ingredients, yet this amazing diversity of taste, texture, flavour. What's not to love?
Thousands of cheeses around the world that you could, you know, work your way through. Roger, I want to come back to you in terms of the competitions. I want you to take us through that. What is that like when you're a contestant and when you're a judge as well? What's the atmosphere like? You know, take us through the World Cheese Awards.
As a contestant, it's actually quite easy because you don't get to go to the judging. You send your cheese in and then it's put on a table with hundreds or thousands of other cheeses, and then a team of judges come in and are very critical about what's good and what's bad about your cheese. You get some quite harsh feedback sometimes, which can hurt, but actually it's nice to know what other people think of your cheese, because you can get a bit precious about the cheese that you make, and it's nice to know what other people think of it. It's the award ceremony I find terrifying, to be honest, because you don't... I love to win. I am quite competitive, it's quite daunting knowing what do people really think of it. I know I like what I make, but the question is, do other people I respect is you know, peers in the industry, do they like it? And at the end of the day, is it what the customer on the street wants? because you can make what you think is the best cheese in the world, but if no one else likes it, it's not the best cheese in the world.
It is that, you know, moment of reckoning where
absolutely
you find out once and for all whether you do really do make the best cheese. But it's something that you're working on all the time. It's not something that you've learned and it's done, but it's something that you try to perfect always.
Yeah, so we're constantly, I mean, as the seasons change, the cheese changes. It's, you know, you can get, I've seen some very big factories that churn some goodish cheese out, where it's exactly the same every single day, but that's not what we do. Our cheese changes through the season as the milk changes with the season, as the temperature in the cheese room changes, whether it go from winter to summer. All these tiny little things affect the cheese, and as an artisan cheesemaker, you slowly learn how to adjust what you're doing to cope with those changes that you have no control over, because you are trying to produce a consistent cheese, but people are still accepting of a little bit of seasonal variation. And certain, you know, there are certain cheeses that, you know, Comté made from spring milk to me is just one of the most spectacular cheeses in the world. But it's hard to find, because when you go to a shop for Comté, you don't know what you're getting unless you go to a really good affineur who tells you this was made on this farm on this day from the, and it's finding those people, you know, it's quite hard, and but it's fun.
It is so much about the producers, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And in England, we're very lucky now. There are a lot of really good artisan cheesemakers, and I'm very excited that Carla is out here starting because I think it's something Dubai could be very good at is cheese making, because you fly an awful lot of cheese over here from all around the world, which is great for us in the UK. I'm not complaining about that, but I think Dubai does have the ability to produce a lot more of these sorts of things here in the country.
There's nothing like getting it locally, and we're just as excited as you are to have Carla producing her goat's cheese, and we've tasted it before. You sell it at the farmer's market. That's going extremely well, isn't it?
It is. It's a great start to the season. A lot of our repeat customers come back. You recognise everyone's face. It's been really great, and really great to see everyone and have that community feel, and It's been a good start to the season.
That's really brilliant. We're going to be tasting more of your cheese today, Carla. But Oliver, this is a big time of the year for you guys at Jones the Grocer. People ordering their cheese boards ready for Christmas. We are going to be getting to throughout the show what makes that perfect cheese board. But for you as a cheesemonger, you know, what are you looking for when you're putting together those cheeses? I know that you're a huge fan, obviously, of Roger's cheese, but what is it?
I mean, there's multiple factors. I suppose one has to go back to one of Roger's earlier comments that you know, we're retailers. We look at what our customers are interested in, and we always have to consider that as part of our curating our range. Beyond that, we talk about styles. So whether it's different types of milk, your goat's milks, sheep's milks, cow's milk, buffalo milk, etc. Camel's milk, we spoke about earlier. We haven't quite got there yet. And then again, you know, as I talk about the different categories of cheeses, there are so many different styles within that. We have washed rinds, where the cheeses have been washed with, you know, with brine, etc., which add different colours, tastes and textures. We do a little bit of flavour added, which is interesting. I'm not always the hugest fan of it, but there's a huge market. So things like, we have Moliterno al Tartufo on the board here, which is a truffle infused sheep's milk from Italy, and that's it's hugely popular. Truffle and cheese work really well together. I guess as much as one loves truffle, if one loves cheese as well, then it's a real winner.
The variety there on the cheese board. Many different ones to get to, including sheep's milk, cow's milk, goat's milk. All of those are there, all of the different flavours. We are talking cheese today with the award-winning cheesemaker Roger Longman of White Lake Cheese. We've got Oliver Sutton in studio, retail manager and cheesemonger at Jones the Grocer, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Organic Dairy Farms. We're talking cheese, obviously, but we're also talking the best things that you ate in 2017. But to our panel, this is off the back of an article that was in The Guardian, from Jamie Oliver to Nadia Hussein, a star cast select their highlights of the year. So beginning with Jamie Oliver, cook, activist and food writer, as we know, this happened to him, stuffed squid in Salina in Sicily. He said, this year, me and Chef Gennaro spent a day with a lovely 92-year-old Italian nonna called Francina. And on Salina and the Aeolian Islands, the local fishermen caught a squid, and Francina made this incredible stuffing of capers, lemon zest, garlic, pecorino, breadcrumbs, and parsley. She stuffed the squid, stitched it up, and braised it in the most beautiful sweet tomato sauce with basil. Just let it chug away, and then you simply cook some spaghetti and have a sliced squid with the sauce. It was pure joy, 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 he says. We'd spent the whole day cooking and chatting together, and Francina was adamant that he share the recipe in his Italian cookbook as well, because she is afraid, and this could be a question as well, that recipes like this would die out after some time, and she wanted it to live on. And this actually speaks very much to the whole cheese making tradition as well, that it's something that we need to keep going, and we need to keep learning those skills of cheese making, don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah, I mean, in England, we used to make lots of different sorts of cheese, not just cheddar. But in the Second World War, you know, we were told you're only allowed to make cheddar. So all those skills disappeared. And it's only in the last sort of 10 or 15 years
that... Why did that happen in the war?
Because cheddar ships very easily to the troops and what have you.
Rationing
and stuff like that. It was the most efficient cheese to make. So we used to make in England lots of soft cheeses that disappeared. And now we've got people like myself and other small cheesemakers starting to reinvent that tradition, really, which is very exciting to be part of, definitely.
Yeah. We'll get to learning to make cheese here in the UAE. We had a question on that. Continuing on of the greatest things that people have eaten in 2017, Marina O'Loughlin, restaurant critic, says Tunworth cheese at Cheesy Tiger at Margate. She said, I thought about this long and hard, considering the insanely good Shupa chicken from Joux, the pistachio ice cream from the beach restaurant in Sicily, the porcini donuts with raclette from San Francisco's Rich Table, or the fresh crab roll from the Spud Point Crab Company in Sonoma, near where Hitchcock filmed The Birds. But in the end, it had to be the thing that gave me the purest jolt of sheer pleasure, physical pleasure. It was one of the simplest, rackety, eccentric, cheesy tiger on Margate's harbour arm. It takes a whole Tunworth cheese, like the perfect ripe camembert you rarely ever find, studs it with fat slabs of garlic, crowns it with thyme and olive oil, and bakes it until it's virtually liquid, with tiny new potatoes roasted with more garlic, whole cloves for squeezing on top, plus toasted sourdough and cornichons for this turophile. It's undiluted bliss. What do you think about that?
Stella.
I'm slightly drooling, to be honest.
Is that something that would be on your list of things to eat? Tunworth cheese.
It's fantastic.
Is it?
Fantastic. Yeah. It's a British, I guess one would say a camembert style, surface ripened, white rind. Interestingly, the Brits have taken it over to France to do blind tastings against camembert, and it's come out on top, I think, three times.
Yeah.
Which
very good reputation. It's hard to come by, though, so it is
limited.
It's a very
supply.
Small production.
Why is it so difficult to produce enough of it?
It's a very small cheesemaker who you know, has a very small business and is very happy at that level.
Yeah.
And you find this with a lot of, not just a cheese, but a lot of food. It's, you know, it's fine. It's like Jamie Oliver, wherever he was, you know, it's small producers, and it's finding them is difficult. And this is, you know, where the likes of Jones the Grocer has to earn their money going out and finding these specialist people and bringing those products to the market.
Yeah. So it's all about sourcing them from these very small cheesemakers as well. But I want to go around the panel and ask you, what is the best thing that you've tasted this year Let's start with you, Oliver.
I think that's a desperately unfair question. It's a little like saying pick your favourite child. Before I say the best thing I've tasted, I want to say the thing I'm most excited about tasting, which is Carla's cheese. I'm like seriously, seriously excited by the idea that we have cheese being made here in Dubai. And I feel desperately ignorant that I didn't know about it until I came into the room. So that's what I'm excited about. Best thing I've tasted, it would have to be, it's a Bavarian mountain cheese called Krista. It's, how to describe it? It's in a very similar style to a Comté. Smaller wheel, about a, what would it be, about 15 kilo wheel, and it's aged on for 16 months, and it's got this incredible granular, crystalline, nutty bite to it, sweet, salty. A cheesemaker once described to me his cheese was a 20-mile cheese, and what he meant by that was when you taste it 20 miles down the road, that flavour will still be rolling around your palate. Krista is a 35-mile, maybe 40-mile cheese. It just incredible.
The flavour just keeps on going.
And building, yeah.
And building, and it just continues. Beautiful. Carla?
Okay, so I've not been able to get out of the dairy for about a year. So I've not really gone far and tasted many new things. But we had a chocolate tasting up at Mirzam, the chocolate factory in Alcoors. Mm-hmm. And they have a date and fennel chocolate bar that is superb. And it pairs brilliantly with cheese, believe it or not, and made here in Dubai, and was just wonderful. Really, really fantastic.
As we're going to find out as well, cheese and chocolate definitely make
they do go.
A very happy couple.
They do.
Don't they? Roger?
So, it's like Oliver, it's hard to pick something that's the best, but one of the things that for me has made me happiest, I think, was I was at a cheese show next to a cheesemaker, and he had some butter, which may seem very simple and what have you, but it was a butter made from Montbéliard cow's milk, and it just took me back to being a child, how butter used to taste when I was a child. It was unbelievable, and he only had one small pot of it, so I had to pay an awful lot for that one small pot, and half is still sat in my fridge at home because it's just really, it just makes such happy memories for me. So yeah.
You don't want it to run out as well, so
that's the trouble. Yeah, he doesn't make much of it, and I don't know when I'm going to see him again. So yeah, I'll have to keep dribbling that out slowly on toast.
You do kind of feel like, you know, butter these days, it doesn't have the same flavour that it did when we were all growing up, does it? Why is that?
It's very industrialised, the manufacture of it these days.
Yeah,
and it's also the cows that they get the butter from is a very different breed. You know, so we make cow's milk with Guernsey cow's milk, and it's much higher in fat. It's a much creamier milk, but most milk that you see, you buy in bottles or is made into cheese is from Holsteins, which is, you know, it just doesn't have the same fat and protein content as those other older breeds, but it's a much more efficient animal to milk to get more litres, and it's that industrialisation of food, really. You lose the flavour, and there's no simple way around that. The advantage from my point of view is that means what I do will continue to survive because I don't have to compete with that industry. I produce food and cheese that people understand why it costs more, because they know the flavour that they're getting from it. And also, you know, I know how to mature my cheese, and this is something we'll come on to later, is, you know, when is a cheese ready to eat? And that's quite a key point, really.
It really is. It just speaks to why artisan producers are so, so important, going back to the roots, going back to those techniques that are passed down generation after generation. We are talking cheese, but coming up, we're going to be talking cheese tea. Not cheese and tea, but cheese tea. Yes, it is a thing, and you could be hearing a lot more about it in 2018. Coming back to our food and our food news, in fact.
The latest food news.
Cheese tea. What do we think about this? Cheese tea. I say cheese tea because these are two words that, you know, they go unnoticed separately, but together they're going to make you double take. But this could be one of the biggest trends of 2018. So cheese tea doesn't involve a wedge of gorgonzola blended into your Earl Grey. Instead, it's a base of iced tea, traditionally jasmine, oolong or green, and it's topped with a fluffy cloud of salted cheesecake-like cream. And though the drink originated in a Taiwanese street stalls around 2010, it wasn't until it made its way to China when bloggers like Ethan Wong noticed people were willing to wait up to 3 hours for cups of the sweet, savoury beverage. Now, Oliver, I know that you have actually heard of this, and you are on a mission to try it, in fact.
I'm not sure I'm on a mission to try it. I have some experience of the queue. I was recently in Shanghai. Jones the Gracer will be opening in Shanghai in the new year. We saw the fad that is cheese tea. And it's true. The queues were 3 hours long. And I must confess, I'm intrigued. I love cheese, so I suppose I'm duty bound by my profession to try these things. However, not if I have to stand in a queue for 3 hours for something that doesn't immediately make me salivate. It looks like a kind of an overfilled cappuccino, I suppose.
And but with coloured tea in it.
Yeah. I love the fact that you described it as traditionally it's made with. traditionally since last year, it's made with this age-old. I'd be intrigued to see if it spins beyond, you know, China, Taiwan, etc. I'm sure we'll see it in the US. No doubt we'll see a unicorn cheese tea next.
It does sound like that kind of a trend, doesn't it? But in the US, they've got it in the US as well. And owner of a place called Little Fluffy Head Cafe, Jenny Zeng, she says, you've got the sweet and salty flavour from the cheese cream mixed with the earthy and grassy flavour from the tea. And the trick to getting the most out of the experience is making sure you sip the drink at the right angle so the tea and the fluffy foam combine into the frothy new beverage. Now,
does it come with a manual?
Clearly it must. Carla, what do you think?
Just sounds ridiculous. Honestly, I can't. Tea and sugar. Tea and cheese. I just can't do it.
I'm actually intrigued. Roger?
I'm more interested when you say, well, it has to be drunk at the best angle, because I can see there's an opportunity there for someone to 3D print a special little thing for holding your glass at exactly that correct angle for drinking it rather than trying to do it with your hand.
Someone
out there will invent that, definitely.
So that you get it exactly right. Yep. But this is incredible. I mean, it's a trend that you really can't deny. 69 locations across China, 3,000 cups a day that they're selling. But that's just incredible. I don't know. Cheese and tea. Do you think?
It's sort of interesting because cheese and tea can be paired together. I've tried those sort of pairings, and it, at least to some degree, like many pairings, some work, some not so much. And there's a degree of, I guess, a question of taste, if you like. It's just the combination of the two in the same glass that starts to worry me slightly.
True. I mean, growing up, it's one of the greatest joys, really. A beautiful, lovely, soft, salty cheese on some hot, fresh bread and a hot cup of sweet tea. That is beautiful. Yeah, traditionally. I don't know. The Arabs do that. We love doing that. And I'm sure that's a British thing, too.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah?
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd have that any day.
That's every morning,
but all combined in one cup. All down in one. Doesn't do it for
We're
me.
Not sure. We're not sure. You guys have also got your food news stories. Roger, what's yours?
Yeah, so one of my things I'm very keen on is plastic waste or trying to prevent plastic waste. Cheese is amazing and it's a food that actually, as a whole cheese, it doesn't need wrapping. You know, the mold or the yeast that's on the outside protects the cheese that's on the inside. And I think one of the things I find most disheartening is the amount of plastic bottles you find on beaches. And even going to business meetings here, everyone is given a plastic bottle of water. And if they don't drink it, it's just left. And that, you know, I don't understand why there aren't more water coolers or jugs of water, or why water isn't in you know, cans like Coca-Cola, because you can recycle cans, but you can't. No one recycles plastic. You know,
we're very lazy about it, aren't we?
Well, it's not such. It's hard to reuse it, even if you do recycle it. You know, and in England, most of our plastic used to go to China, and the Chinese have said we actually don't want any more. We've got enough, thank you very much. So I don't know where all this plastic is going to go. And it's, you know, it's something that does worry me considerably. And Dubai particularly has some beautiful beaches, and it's very disheartening when you find bits of plastic washing up.
There's nothing easier than just carrying around your own water bottle.
Absolutely. You get some great stainless steel and aluminium water bottles. You know, you just fill them up from your water cooler at home, and that keeps you going for the day.
Yeah.
Rather than having, you know, plastic bottles. Mm. You know, it's something that will change. People are becoming more aware of it. I mean, in the UK, we've just had this brilliant series on TV called The Blue Planet with David Attenborough. And some of the footage of, you know, what is happening in the oceans is beautiful, but also quite scary, really.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant photograph of this seahorse with its tail wrapped around a cotton bud. You know, because why does a cotton bud need to be plastic? You know, it's single use plastic. It's got to stop, and it will change. But you know, people do need to. People go, oh, the government needs to change it. But actually, you know, as a person on a day-to-day basis, you can do a massive amount to change that, really.
It really is.
And I notice you're drinking from a stainless steel bottle there, so
yes. Well
done.
Yeah, always have to have my bottle with me. And I'm with you because it really is. It's single use. It gets thrown out. And after a while, you just think, there is no way. You know, this is going into landfill. And you know, you would hope that it was recycled. We do recycle at home. But at the same time, just stop that plastic. It's horrible. Oliver, your food news story.
So I was going to talk about top 10 food trends for 2018, but when you read the different stories, you get 10 different trends, so I got confused. So I decided instead I was going to talk about the British Dietetic Association has released a list of diets we should steer well clear of in the new year. And I thought with the new year, everyone starts dieting. So they list among these diets. I don't really want to knock dieting per se. I just think, you know, balanced diets might really honestly be the way forward. So the raw vegan diet, the alkaline diet, the Piopi diet, excuse pronunciation, and the ketogenic diet. And then they also mention Katie Price nutritional supplements. Less said, the better, I think. Do we really need to be told that? So, as I say, I guess, you know, diets are so faddish. And I think all of these diets where people go on these crazy fads, you know, they're desperately unhealthy. And so many of these claims that are made about them are, frankly, untrue. The idea that... you know, eating alkaline food will affect the level of acidity and pH balance. No, it won't. There's no scientific proof behind it.
That's the problem with most of these, that there's, you know, no proof around it. People are just looking for the next trend and for the next fad, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's a degree of this that goes back to education. You know, we took, you know, home economics got taken away at school. It's just eat healthy, folks, and it's not that hard. We all know what the principles are in reality.
And I think it's one of those, I mean, cheese is a really good example of this, is, you know, if you want to eat good food, buy expensive good cheese and just eat a small amount of it. If you're making a cheese sauce, you don't need a lot of a really good cheddar to get the flavour, rather than a big block of Irish or Australian mild cheddar. You need a lot, because there's not a lot of flavour there.
Yeah.
So I think the key thing, you know, is cheese is fat and protein. It's good for you. It's not bad for you.
I'm a little upset that you said Australian cheddar doesn't have a lot of flavour.
No such thing as Australian cheddar. It comes from England.
The people of Bega are up in arms as we speak.
I mean, coming back to what we were saying earlier about artisan and cheese in England, there is quite a strong artisan movement of cheese makers in Australia now, and I've come across quite a few of them, and they are making huge inroads, and it's great to see it. I think possibly the only place that hasn't really got many artisan cheese makers yet is New Zealand, by the sound of it. So I think if there's any, you know, any New Zealanders out there, you need to get that ball rolling, I think.
Get your game up. We are talking food news. We're talking health and well-being as well. And coming up, we're going to talk about, in fact, if you want a healthy diet in 2018, maybe eat some cheese. People who eat 40 grams of cheese a day could be less likely to have a stroke or heart attack. That's according to new research we'll discuss next. We are starting to serve up the cheese here in the studio. We are joined by award-winning cheesemaker Roger Longman, Oliver Sutton, retail manager and cheesemonger at Jones the Grocer, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Organic Dina Dairy Organic Farms. Just before the break, we were talking about cheese tea and whether we would try it, whether it sounded ridiculous, or maybe it was something delicious and you really had to try it. We've actually got Carl on the line. Hello, Carl.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. You've actually tried cheese tea.
Yeah, actually I have. I was on holiday with my wife, and we were walking down a little side street.
Where
and
were
she's
you?
Like, oh, look, we were actually in Miami, oddly enough.
Okay.
A little side street, and she's like, oh, I want to get this tea. It says, you know, cheese tea, this, that, the third, and I was like, you know, it's probably going to be gross. But she's a big tea person. She's a huge cheese person, so she's like, these two things have to go well together. So after she got her cup, and I tried a bit, I had to get my own because it was that good.
No.
Like it was, I was extremely skeptical, but there were so many different options at the little shop. You could do it with matcha tea, green tea, lemongrass tea, and basically you pick the tea and then you pick like the style of cheese foam at the top, and it really works well together. And then, you know, they kind of give you guidance along the way.
Well, so which flavor did you choose then, Carl? And your wife, what did she choose?
We both actually opted for the matcha tea with like a white cheddar type top.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like it goes well together.
We're all shaking our heads in the studio. We're like, are you kidding?
No, I'm so serious.
Wow.
The crazy part is, once you actually try it, because, you know, like I said, I went into it extremely skeptical. I'm like, this is going to be the worst thing ever. But after the first sip, it's magical. Like, literally, once you try it, it's like, okay, I understand.
What describe the taste for us, Carl.
Oh, wow. Honestly, it's kind of hard. Like a salty-ish. I don't really know how to describe it, honestly. I'd say it's a bit salty. I had mine lightly sweetened, the tea side. So it was a little salty sweet, but it was very savory for a drink.
And it's unlike anything you've ever had before.
Yeah, nothing at all. I understand the appeal of it. Once you get people through the door to actually try it, I think anyone would pick it up and be like, okay, I like this, especially if you like the two flavors independently.
Right. We are all shaking our heads in the studio. Roger, you're laughing and just going, no way. But I think, Carl, your advice is don't knock it till you try it. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Once you come across it, just ask the barista what's the best flavor that they recommend. And no matter how crazy it is, just have at it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Carl, for sharing your experience. That's amazing. Well, there you go. You know, don't knock it till you try it, Roger.
Yeah, I think the thing that got me from that was when he said white cheddar. That's not a thing.
Do you know, you say that, but for some people, this, like, cheddar. Have you ever had Tim Tams, cheddar-flavored Tim Tams? Tim Tams are traditionally chocolate biscuits from Australia, okay, but these were cheddar flavoured, and my husband got these when he went to Indonesia. There are all kinds of unbelievable flavours out there.
The key word there is flavoured.
Yeah, there's no actual cheese involved.
True, but they had that, they tried to put that flavour in there. It doesn't work, I can tell you from first-hand experience. But coming back to your news story, Oliver, earlier, that you were talking about the fad diets and what people should be eating and what people shouldn't be eating. A great bit of research that just recently come out said that eating a small portion of cheese every day could reduce your chance of developing heart disease or stroke. And indulging in a festive cheese board is one of the perks and of the Christmas countdown, despite its reputation for being high in fat. This is a new study that suggests that people who eat cheese regularly might actually be healthier. This comes out of the European Journal of Nutrition. Researchers at Suzhou University in China evaluated 15 previous studies from Europe and the US, which tracked the diet and health of more than 200,000 people. So it's a proper study. And in doing so, they discovered that people who regularly ate cheese, amounting to about a matchbox, it's not a lot. So yes, we love cheese. We want to indulge, but don't overindulge. So about a matchbox-sized portion, 40 grams, each day on average, we're 14% less likely to develop coronary heart disease, and their chances of having a stroke were 10% lower. So there you go. This is actually super healthy. We often get told cheese isn't healthy, though, but it has benefits.
I think the thing people that mistake that cheese is not unhealthy, it's just how much you eat. I think that's the key part of that. As Oliver was saying earlier, you know, a balanced diet is everything. I think the word diet is misused. When you say you're on a diet, people think you're trying to lose weight. Actually, whenever you eat something, it's a diet of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, and balanced diet is what you should be aiming for.
Mm. And you need to make it a lifestyle. It has to be something that you can keep going with. And as we know, if we try to cut stuff out like cheese, like chocolate, it doesn't last very long, does it?
No.
As long as you eat what is very good quality, really good quality cheese, really good quality chocolate, I don't think you can go wrong. Just not a lot of it.
And occasionally overindulging is good for the soul, as we're about to do.
It is very good for the soul indeed. Oliver Sutton, retail manager and cheesemonger at Jones the Grocer, is here. We've also got award-winning cheesemaker Roger Longman, who is from White Lake Cheese and officially the maker of the best goat's milk cheese in the world. And Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Dairy Organic Farms right here in the UAE. She does make cheese, and we have had a question in from one of our listeners saying, I love my Irish cheddar. That's from Julie. Welcome back. It is the second hour of the Thursday brunch. It's the Cheese Board Show, and we're celebrating that food that is so seductive, so addictive. We all love it. It is cheese. We're going to be exploring some of the greatest cheeses from around the world, the salty, the creamy, the hard, the soft, all about that food that you could really just eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner and dessert. In the studio with us are Roger Longman, artisan cheesemaker at White Lake Cheese and officially the maker of the best goat's milk cheese in the world. Oliver Sutton is very, very busy as we speak, retail manager and cheesemonger at Jones the Grocer. He is cutting up the cheese that he has brought in on the cheese board. And in just a moment, you can see on our Facebook page, Facebook Live, he's cutting up the cheese as we speak, and also follow us on Instagram for more there too. And we want to hear from you. Which cheese gets your taste buds going, and how do you like to eat it? What are we looking at here? Do you want to start taking us through that cheese, Roger, that we've got in front of us there?
Okay, so I'm going to dive into my cheese first because I am like that. I've brought four cheese along with me here today. I've bought a cheese that's made with Guernsey cow's milk called Bagborough Brie. So Bagborough is the name of my farm. It's a Brie style cheese. It's the same size as a Camembert, but it's a Brie style rather than a Camembert style.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where, if you see on your Facebook Live, if anyone is watching it, how very, very yellow and buttery this cheese is. And it's a much sweeter Brie. So Oliver's brought some Brie de Meaux there, which is a stunning Brie, but that's a much more cabbagey, a much more stronger flavour. This is a much sweeter, creamier Brie, and that suits English palates, basically.
Gorgeous.
Then we also have some sheep's parve. So my other passion, apart from cheese making, is cycling. So I wanted to make a cheese that celebrated the bike races in the spring in northern France and Belgium on cobbled roads. So I wanted a cheese that was in a shape of a cobble. So I started making a sheep's cheese that would fit into that shape very well.
Okay.
And that's the one that won Supreme Champion at the British Cheese Awards this year. And it's a lot of people look at it and think it looks like a goat's cheese, which it does. And then they can't understand why it doesn't have that goaty kick to it. It has that sweetness of a sheep's cheese. And then they realise it's actually a sheep's cheese. And that sort of confuses a lot of judges because it's not what they expect. And I quite like that. Because senses is a big part of, and your brain quite often tricks you into thinking things are going to taste in a certain way. And we get a lot of customers who are find they're allergic to cow's milk, so that they're switching to goat's cheeses. But they think they're not going to like goat's cheese. So we start them off on a hard goat's cheese we make called Rachel, which is the most ungoaty goat's cheese in the world.
It really is. I had some before.
Yeah, it's not what you expect for a goat's cheese. So a lot of people eat it and don't even realise it's a goat's cheese. And then we say, well, that's a goat's cheese. And suddenly they think, oh, actually, I like goat's cheese. And then they want to know what else they can taste.
It's harder and it's got that bite to it.
And bizarrely for a goat's cheese, it melts like a cheddar, or a raclette. And
warm melted onto new potatoes, it is spectacular. And that, to be honest, that's I'm a very good cheesemaker. I'm not such a good cook, but I'm very good at melting cheese onto various things, and that's my level of cooking. A lot of people get very snobby about melting cheese. Nothing wrong with melting cheese.
Oh, I beg your pardon. How can anybody get snobby about that? That's one of life's simplest joys.
One of the trends in the UK at the moment is, I think, called cheese curds or cheddar curds, which is a Canadian thing. Which is cheddar when it's first made and salted before it's pressed into a mold, and they just melt it onto chips. And I've got a very good cheddar maker near me who started doing this, and I thought, I'm quite a snob about these things, and I didn't think that was right. But actually, having had it, it is spectacular, because you've got that all that beautiful cheddar. And as a child, I made cheddar. I did the hard churning of by hand of cheddar. So I used to eat a lot of this as a kid. And again, it took me back to childhood memories tasting this stuff again. So if there's any Canadian listeners out there, you can get your cheese curds if you're ever in the UK. You don't have to go all the way back to Canada for it.
What makes the perfect cheddar?
Oh, the perfect cheddar. So the perfect cheddar is grass-fed cows. You can't get away from that. It's so, you know, what the cows eat is a massive part of it. The best cheddars are made using what we call live starters, which are bacteria that have been passed down for generations through farming families, rather than sort of modern freeze-dried bacteria that a lot of us use. And then it's the maturing is the key thing. So the cave or the building that the cheese is stored in and they're matured in. And you can, again, Comté is a classic where you've got several factories that make Comté, and then lots of different affineurs, which is what the French people call cheese maturers. They buy it and they affineur it with their secret recipes, and it changes the cheese dramatically. And that's, a lot of people don't realise cheese maturing is as important, if not more important, than the actual making of the cheese. In England, we have lots of cheesemakers. We don't have many affineurs. France, you know, you have lots of affineurs, and it's a big thing. If you're a Frenchman and you know cheese, you have a favourite affineur who does your cheese exactly how you like it.
And because it's all about how they mature it.
Absolutely.
Knowing exactly how to do it. What are those things, the details that need to be known?
Okay, so temperature and humidity are the easy key points. But it's the type of humidity. So Roquefort is aged in caves in a certain area in France that's a volcanic rock, where you get a particular type of humidity where the air slowly percolates through the rock, and that gives it a particular flavour. Mm. I went to France this year to a railway tunnel they've converted into a cheese cave that was full of Comté and Beaufort, and it's going to sit there for 2 or 3 years maturing in a similar way that fine wines mature in a cave, because you have a stable temperature and humidity. And that's, you know, people think, oh, it doesn't matter, the wine's in a glass bottle, but it's got a cork on it, and if it's too dry, the cork dries out and you get a corked wine. And that's, you know, and a lot of people talk about, well, what's wrong with plastic corks? It does make a massive difference, because wine can breathe through a proper cork.
Yeah, but for the cheese, it's all about that humidity and the temperature, making sure that it's you know, stored in exactly the right conditions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Key in everything.
The key in everything. Have we started tasting the cheese, Carla?
Yes. I think I've gone
through
every
single
one.
That's why she went very silent.
Yes.
I want to know what you think. Tell me.
I really like this, the chocolate that's been put over the top.
Talk us through the chocolate, Oliver.
You've
served up from your cheese platter here. Now tell us what's going on.
So we've got a really broad selection. We have we'll start with the chocolate, shall we? Mm. We have Gorgonzola Dolce. So this is Dolce being sweet, a creamy sweet Gorgonzola blue cheese, soft blue cheese from Italy, and I've shaved over it Caribe Noir with hazelnuts, which is a 66% cocoa chocolate from Valrhona. We work with Valrhona chocolates at Jones de Grey, so I met with them yesterday. We were discussing pairings, and this is one that they recommended. Actually, they recommended the Caribe, if I'm pronouncing it properly. That's an Englishman's pronunciation of a French chocolate, I hasten to add. They'd suggested the plain one, but I thought with hazelnuts, nuts and cheese work well together, why not? Mm. And actually, I haven't tasted it yet, so can I go quiet for a moment?
You absolutely can. I'll tell you, because I just had a pop of it just now. It kind of, it's a kick. It gives you quite a kick, doesn't it, the gorgonzola? And I really like the chocolate. It does complement it really well. There's a softness to the chocolate, even though the cocoa quantity is quite high in it as well. It's a little bit bitter, but it's got that sweetness that does complement it.
I love that. I love the sweetness.
I like the finish. Yeah. The finish is really nice, and you get that little nutty note as well.
Mm. Yeah, no, Sarah had texted in, cheese and chocolate sounds like cheese and tea. No, cheese and chocolate works well together compared to cheese tea. But we did get a question in earlier, Carla, asking about making cheese, learning to make cheese, because this is something that you learned to do within the last year. Can people learn how to make cheese on their own here in Dubai, in the UAE?
Yeah. Cheese is really simple, like Roger said, to make. And the art of it is in getting good at it and, you know, your skill. I think Jones the Grocer sell a few kits.
Absolutely,
you can make.
We do. Yeah.
You can go home and make your...
We have a feta kit and a mozzarella kit. So they're fresh cheeses. So we were discussing earlier. They're the easiest to make because you don't need to worry about that maturation. They are cheeses classically made in the morning for consumption that same day. So they're a good starting point. Again, it's about finding good milk. That's always going to be the trick.
It's finding good milk. And the problem you'll find with most milk you buy in the supermarkets here and around the world is what's called homogenized, which means the fat has been smashed. And it's very hard to make good cheese from that. So you need to look. I don't know what it's like over here, but certainly in the UK, you need to look for organic milk because that isn't generally homogenized. So the key word you're looking for is not homogenized if you're trying to make cheese out of the milk. Otherwise, it doesn't get the structure that you need.
Because you do need that, you know, the milk that has that cream layer on top, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, because when we were kids, milk had cream on the top. It doesn't anymore because it's homogenized. And the reason they homogenize it, it gives it a longer shelf life, particularly in the UK where people go to the supermarket once a week to shop. They get their milk once a week and it lasts all week. You know, when we were kids, milk lasted 3 days maximum, even in the fridge.
It was fresh.
Yeah.
And it was proper.
Yeah,
and
delivered to your doorstep.
I'm lucky. I've always lived on a farm, so I've always had fresh raw milk straight from the animals, and you can't beat it.
You can't. You really can't. It doesn't taste the same. Milk is not the same. And you wonder, you think, this is not going to be, it's not going to be the same nutritional content as well, is it?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, milk, you know, a lot of people drink skim milk and semi-skim milk because they're worried about the fat content, but most people have no idea what the fat content of milk is. It's about 3.5%. It's tiny. So semi-skimmed is sort of 1.5%, and fully skimmed is zero. But actually, you look at the actual grams of milk, you know, you have to drink a massive amount of milk to get any sort of level of fat, and you're missing out on all the flavor because with cheese, the fat is the flavor.
The fat absolutely is the flavour, as it is with a lot of food. So this is the starting point, really. Make sure that your milk is good. And as you were saying earlier, because the cheeses that you'd want to be making at home, you don't want to have them to be cheeses that need to be matured. They're the ones that you can make, the ones that are going to be fresh at home, the mozzarellas. The ricotta you can make at home as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And feta you can make.
Do you know what the word ricotta means?
No, tell me.
Okay, ricotta is Italian for twice cooked. So when you make cheese, you get curds and whey, and the curds is the cheese and the whey is what's left behind. If you then heat that whey up to about 84 degrees, the whey protein that's left floats to the top, and that's what is ricotta. It's a really simple cheese to make, but you've got to make a first cheese first before you can make ricotta. Proper ricotta.
So we make our halloumi. We do a halloumi is, and then with the whey, we heat that up, and then you get the ricotta.
Yeah.
We pair it with our honey, or Balqis honey, the honey man. Yeah. That's our twice-cooked ricotta.
Because obviously halloumi comes from Cyprus, and over there they would call ricotta, I think it's Inari. That's their traditional name for it. It's exactly the same principle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's great stuff.
There you go. There are some of the ways to make cheese at home. You can get kits apparently from Jones the Grocer as well. Yes, we are back with our cheese board show. It is so utterly delicious here in the studio. We are trying all sorts of cheese And Oliver Sutton from Jones the Grocer is going to take us through his epic cheese board that he's brought in for us today. Carla, you've brought in some cheese. Mm-hmm. Roger has got his cheese. It is really something here in the studio. Oliver, talk us through this. Where shall we start?
Let's start with a French goat's cheese while Roger gives me daggers across the table. So we have Chabichou de Poitou. And I think it's interesting what Roger was saying earlier, actually, about the style of cheeses they make. This would be, you know, this is an incredibly classic French goat's cheese from Poitou-Charentes. That's the one, yeah. So beautiful ivory white paste. You've got this slightly rippled rind. It's always funny when I talk about cheese, because actually what I like to say to customers is put it in your mouth and try it. Because ultimately that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about eating the cheese. So I'm going to put it back to you, Sally. What do you think? What are you tasting?
It's delicate. It is soft. Oh, it's lovely. It has a little bit of a tang, but it is a lovely, delicate flavour. I love this. It's great.
Really nice, smooth paste.
Very smooth.
This is, when we talk about pairing in cheese boards and how we would build a cheese board, I particularly like honey. I think honey with goat's cheese is just a stellar combination. You've got on your plate a little bit of yellow box eucalyptus honey from Australia, from your native Australia.
Yes, we make great honey.
Which I think is, Aussie honeys are fantastic. I'm learning about them every day. Also, truffle honey with cheese is fantastic. I think particularly with blue cheeses.
There are cheeses that actually have truffle in them as well, but that can be a very overwhelming flavour. It depends if that is your thing or not.
We have one for you to sample, actually. Moliterno al tartufo, which we will work our way towards. We've already tried the Rachel, which we feature, which is, I mean, it's just a fantastic cheese. I was highly amused to see that Roger is coming on the show, because I've worked with these guys' cheeses for years. And Rachel, it's the first... It's genuinely, I hate to say this in front of Roger if I'm honest, but it's one of the first cheeses
I truly
fell in love with, because it is just such an interesting cheese, and I love the seasonality of it as well. It, you know, from the fresh new season cheeses to the more aged cheeses, really interesting.
I love the story behind the name.
It depends which story you've heard.
Well, this is the one I've heard. Rachel was named a friend of mine, like the cheese. She's sweet, curvy and slightly nutty.
Yeah, she's slightly more nutty than she used to be.
But is it, you know, how did you come up with this cheese?
We experiment a lot with our cheese making. You know, we're lucky that we're a modern cheese maker, so we're not tied to any particular rules or traditions about how we make cheese. So Rachel is a combination of a Gouda style cheese and an Alpine style cheese. And actually Gouda style cheese comes from Alpine style cheeses anyway, so it's a combination of those things. Is how we started, and then you make cheese, and then you have to wait 3 or 4 months to see what it's like, and then you change one little thing, and then you wait 3 or 4 months to see what difference that's made. So it's a very slow process to get it to where it is now, and we're very happy with where it is now. It's a great cheese. It's our biggest selling cheese. It has a massive circle of fans. A lot of people, I think the frustrating thing from my point of view is lots of people have heard of this great cheese called Rachel. They've not heard of White Lake, who make Rachel. They know the name Rachel, they don't know White Lake. And we're trying to get people to recognise that, you know, if you like Rachel, you'll probably like a lot of the other cheese that White Lake makes, such as Driftwood and Parve and stuff like that. But my problem is I'm a very good cheesemaker. I don't really understand Instagram and marketing and stuff like that. So I'm trying to learn slowly, but you can't teach an old dog new tricks, is as they say sometimes.
Roger, it will change your world if you understand Instagram. And so you're going to have to get yourself a social media manager. I want to come to one of the texts that's come in. This is great. You cannot beat Appleby's Farmhouse Cheshire cheese. When working in the family business in the 80s, the highlight of the week was going to the farm to taste and buy the cheese of the week. What are they talking about here? Tell me.
So Appleby's Cheshire is a British territorial cheese. So we talk about territorial cheeses in the UK. Each region or territory has its own style of cheese. So you may remember us being on our soapbox slightly earlier about cheddar being from the English West Country. Cheshire is a region. You have the salt flats of Cheshire, which again it imparts flavour into the cow's milk. Cheshire cheese is it's a fairly lactic hard cheese. Now Appleby's themselves, Lucy Appleby, you know, great grandmother Appleby, who sadly passed away a few years ago, I'd say she's sort of the godmother, I beg your pardon, of the British artisan cheese movement. She at the time, a lot of Cheshires were being made, and they were being wax coated. Now, when you wax coat a cheese, I'm not here to knock anyone doing that, but you kind of smother the life of the cheese. It can't develop in quite the same way. So often where you see wax coated sort of small truckles, the cheeses have already been aged and then they're wax coated, and that actually gives them life, and that's quite a good thing, particularly for us here in Dubai where we can import those cheeses and keep them for longer. But when you're waxing a whole large wheel, so a Cheshire should be about 8 kilos, you kind of smother the life of the cheese. So Lucy reintroduced the cloth bandages onto the cheese. So the cheeses are bandaged in cloth and then buttered and then allowed to mature. So as Roger was talking about the maturing process, what she did was reintroduce a traditional technique that's been taken up by so many cheesemakers. And you just saw this incredible, you know, leap forward, I think, in the quality of British artisan cheese, because rather than trying to do new and different, we looked backwards and went, actually, what's the traditional technique? I think that's one of the really interesting things with what Roger's doing, is that you're making new cheeses, but you're utilizing very traditional methods and techniques.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's a blend of old and new. And that for me is where you start to get super interesting cheeses.
Super interesting cheeses, as we're tasting today as well. But it's that all these techniques, all of these traditions are coming back. We're loving your text. Yannick says, Mont d'Or, baked, of course, with bread, a nice creamy Havarti, nice extra old cheddar or blue cheese, cut razor thin and eaten atop a toasted European dark rye bread with butter. That's from Timothy. Loving it. It's very much spoilt here in the studio with an outstanding selection of cheeses, artisan cheeses. That's exactly what we like to see. Oliver is still very busy cutting up from the cheese board. And lots of your questions are also coming in. This one asking, can you clarify for me if skim milk has sugar in it, as I buy full cream milk here? But someone suggested that skim has sugar in it. Cannot wait to try the tea with cheese. Great show, says Liz. I think with low-fat products, they generally do have to add sugar in order to to make up the product. No?
Roger? I don't know what it's like over here, but certainly in the UK, skim milk or semi-skim milk, that's it. There's nothing added to it. Soya milk, different matter. If you look at what actually goes into soya milk, it's a tremendous amount of emulsifiers and sugars and stabilizers. That's not a milk. It's a plant-based liquid.
Which kind of answers the next question. A question from Sally Prosser, my custard buy, a regular on the show as well. She wants to know what you think of vegan cheese.
I've never actually tried it. and I don't have a problem with the principle of it. What I have a problem with the principle is the use of the word cheese for a vegetable-based product. And the same with almond milks and things like that. They're great products. They're very useful for people who are vegans. But I think that the use of the word milk and cheese with those sort of products is a misuse of a word. I think, you know, the producers of those products need to find a better word for describing what it is. And, you know, the French may say the same thing when I make a cheese and call it a brie. They say it's not a brie. Well, it's made in a brie style. It's made from cow's milk, so it's a brie. But I think calling a vegan product a cheese is not right.
Well, there you go. That's the word from Roger. I think you agree a bit there, Oliver?
We have a lot of interest. I mean, we have a lot of interest from vegans coming into Jones. So we've actually looked recently at a vegan cheese, just because we get these inquiries. You know, I struggle with it because, candidly, and, you know, this is always down to personal taste, I thought it tasted revolting. And
that's your opinion.
I can only say what I think. And you know, ultimately we're led by buying products that we think are lovely, and we want to supply our customers with lovely food. We will go out and we will look at other ones, and if I can find something that tastes great to fulfill that demand, and we can stand behind as a brand and say, you know what, you should try this, it tastes great, then absolutely we'll do it. But if everyone around the table is kind of running to get a napkin,
that's not what you want.
That's not what we want to give our customers.
A question for you, Carla. For this one is from Kathy saying, "Oh, hi, super program. Great to hear Carla making cheese in Dubai. Would be amazing if the welfare of goats was addressed, as most have a challenging existence. Or do they? I wonder. Do they?
Well, ours don't. They have a pretty comfortable life, and I think you can tell by the quality of the milk. So happy goats, happy milk and happy cheese.
What kind of conditions are they in?
So they have a really nice farm. They're very relaxed. They get good food, you know, sheltered from the heat as much as you can, free to roam around. They have their kids with them, and they produce good milk, so they are very well looked after. And the ones that we have and the ones that farmers genuinely look after, they want to make sure that they're looking after their animals really well. Otherwise, they're going to lose them, and they don't want to lose them. So they will look after them as we do. The ones that you see out on the mountainside, obviously, they're wild, you know. So it doesn't make any sense for us to mistreat an animal, because we want that animal to live a long life and produce good milk.
Of course, they're your source. And yeah. Roger, this is obviously a concern for you as well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm a third generation farmer. I've been around animals most of my life. And as Carla said, happy animals are productive animals. And if you don't look after animals, you don't make money. And you don't survive as a business. And there are, you know, there are cases in newspapers all around the world where, you know, farmers have been caught mistreating animals, and they quite rightly have been prosecuted for it. And most of them are no longer in business. But I think if you look at successful farmers, they are successful because they treat their animals extremely well. And if you look at modern farming techniques compared to the sort of, you know, what I grew up on, farming is light years away. I mean, you know, in the UK you have robots that milk cows, so the cows come in to be milked whenever they feel like. They're not having to conform to the standard of, you know, the whole group coming in at once, and that's a big leap forward, I think, for animal welfare. I'd love to be able to do that with goats, but unfortunately goats will chew a robot to pieces, so I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, well, there you go. If you've got any questions for our panel, send those into 4001. Now, the rind of the cheese, that is something that it really differs across the different cheese types. There are some that you can eat. There are some that you can't. There are some that you can do other things with and add them to food in other different ways. So can you guys take us through the different types of rind in the cheeses? Roger?
I'll have a quick stab at that. So for me, there's two basic types of rind, I think. So with cheese, you've got the cheese on the inside, and then you've got a rind of some sort on the outside, and that's to protect the cheese on the inside and to help it ripen. So you have mould rinds like penicillin mould that you get on Brie's, and also lactic cheeses like our Driftwood and Parve. And then you have yeasts on the outside that you get on washed rind cheeses such as Rachel, Comté, and things like that. And again, it's the particular yeasts that grow on there impart particular flavours onto the cheese, and it's they're all living things. They're bacteria and yeasts and moulds that are alive and growing, and that's half the skill of an affineur and a cheesemaker is getting the right things to grow in the right conditions and the right balance to give you the flavour that you want for your particular cheese. And that is the art rather than the science of cheesemaking.
Mm, okay. Oliver?
I guess one of the big questions we always get is the rind edible? Which I think people are always concerned about. I think the answer to that is it varies hugely. There are manchegos out there that you can eat the rind on, and there are a lot of the manchego that's out there is plastic coated to protect it, to give it more life. So it really, for me, and I guess I'm bound to say this, is buy your cheese off someone reputable who knows what they're talking about and can give you the right advice. I know people often say you shouldn't eat the rind on Stilton. Personally, I love it. I think there's a huge amount of flavour there. Similarly with Comté, I love the rind. Mm. I think it imparts massive amounts of flavour. It's probably a bit of a question of taste. You know, I am mindful that, you know, a chap called Pascal's been turning it once a week for the last year, but that's all right. I'm going to work on the basis that he washes his hands before he does it. So, I mean, it's there's just a huge amount of variety there, and it really does boil down to the different styles of cheese. And I don't think you could... I mean, you could say... generally maybe avoid hard cheeses, anything with the surface ripened that Roger's just alluded to, like the Breeze, his own cheeses like the Driftwood. Absolutely. I mean, those are the key ones for me. If you don't eat the rind on a Brie, you're missing so much of the personality of that cheese.
And wasting a massive amount of the cheese as well. I think we get a lot of people say, oh, I'm allergic to penicillin, I can't eat. It's completely different. There are millions of types of penicillin. The penicillin mold that you grow on Brie and things like that is not the same as being allergic to penicillin antibiotics. It's a completely different thing. So don't worry about that.
Nothing to worry about. And it's not a health thing as well, that you're going to, something's going to happen to you if you eat the rind. You can eat the rind. But I've heard as well that you can put the rind into things like soups flavour soups as well.
I think the ends of Parmesan.
Yes.
Absolutely. You can really keep them. You can't grate them all the way, or you can, but not so great to eat. Chuck them in soup. Really does give it a real depth of flavour.
Yummy.
Really simple.
Parmigiano Reggiano is one of the cheeses that you've brought in, Oliver, which is a lot like the Manchego as well.
So there's some similarities there. There are also some huge differences. So the Parmigiano we've got 36 month actually aged, and it's from the Vacca Rosso, or red cow. The thing about the red cow's milk is it's particularly suited to aging, so you can mature the cheeses on, and we select cheeses for aging. So where Roger again talks about, you know, the affineurs, the maturers, some cheeses will be better eaten young. Others, you'll have a particular batch or a particular seasonality, and that's why you have cheese graders testing the cheeses. But generally speaking, the Vacca Rossa makes excellent aged cheese. And I think classically people will talk about Parmesan as you grate it over your pasta, you shave it into salads. This isn't too good for that. It's just it's really, really good as a table cheese. Broken up roughly the way we've done it, and I've drizzled it with a 15-year-old balsamic vinegar from the Giusti family, which is a story in its own right. They've been producing balsamic vinegar since 1604, the 17th generation of the same family, which I think is just it's a lovely story, and it's a great, great pairing.
It's that gorgeous kind of sweet and sour of the balsamic over the cheese. It's just lovely.
Sweet, salty. You've got that lovely granular bite. I think a match made in heaven. And then if we talk about the Manchego, I mean, also we should talk about size of the wheels. So the Parmigiano is about a 36-kilo wheel, whereas your Manchego can be anything from about 1 to 3 kgs. Then we talk about age profile. We have a 3-year-old cheese that's 36 kilos. The Manchego Curado we have is about 12 months aged. So this is a 3-kilo wheel that's been aged for 12 months. And because it's a different size, you're starting to get that drier texture that is similar to the Parmesan, a bit of a granular, nutty bite to it. It's incredible with the quince, which and you've brought some along, which is amazing. So classically in Spain, it would be a membrillo paste. The two are, again, fantastic bedfellows.
Yes, match made in heaven. Loving that, the quince paste and the sweetness of that with the Manchego. We are talking cheese coming up. We're going to be talking about when's the right time to buy cheese, because storage is a
Monday through Sunday.
Monday through Sunday. More tips on that and putting together your Christmas cheese board next. We've got a full panel in studio talking cheese today, talking the best pairings on that cheese board, on your Christmas cheese board, putting it together. We've got Carla Thetford here, artisan cheesemaker from Dina Dairy Farms. Now, Carla, I want to ask you about the cheeses that you've brought in. You specialise in goat's cheese.
Yes.
So tell us what you've brought in. So creamy. I've just been having some of your the Ash goat's cheese. Gorgeous. So
we've got a little one with pink peppercorns on top. Really simple. Fresh curd, no salt.
You can have that kind of with honey or with a savoury, really quite versatile. The ashed one is the most popular one we sell. Goats, again, covered in ash, just to deacidify it, and you get those really beautiful moulds growing on it. You've got the fresh ricotta with honey, so we make the halloumi, and then with the whey we make the ricotta. And then we have our hard cheese, which is a cow and goat mix. And that's aged for about 12 months now. That was like a couple of the first cheeses that we made last year. And a bit of quince paste.
Lovely. It's a great pairing there as well. But that's exactly what we want to get to. When you're putting together your cheese board at home, how do you go about choosing the right cheeses? Or how many should you be having on a cheese board? How does it all work? Roger.
I would say that for me, the important thing with cheese board is to have a variety of different milks. So have a sheep, have a goat, have a cow's cheese at least. And I think that the key part is what to put on there is what you can get hold of that's ready to eat. And I think this is where, you know, the likes of Jones the Grocer and other affineurs score, is that you need to go and buy a cheese that's ready to eat, not one that's still got 3 weeks till it's ready to eat. The best thing to do is go and tell them, right, next week I want a brie de mo, I want half a kilo of it ready to eat for a dinner party on the Friday or the Saturday. And I think that's where in Dubai you're very, very lucky in that you do have an extremely good shop here at Jones the Grocer that will enable you to do that. And I think that, you know, that's use their skills to help you build a good cheese board. You know, it's looking at what else you're eating for that the meal that day has a big part to play in it as well.
Timing is everything, Oliver. But tell us about putting together that perfect cheese board.
So again, I think it's about... Well, there's two ways one can approach this. Roger just talks about variety, and I think absolutely that's one of the keys. Your blue, your soft, your hard, and the variety of milks. But also think about the number of guests and the amount you're going to serve. If it's a small soiree, do you really want to have six cheeses there? In fact, I think the French etiquette always says you shouldn't have an even number of cheeses on a cheese board.
Oh,
but I'm an Englishman, so you can have six or eight or seven. I really don't mind. We always talk to our customers about buy little and often. Because keeping cheese is difficult. This is a relatively difficult climate for storing cheese, particularly in the hotter months. So I think our take always is, and what we hope to do is, we're the experts. Let us look after it for you. Let us sell it to you in the best condition. And I'd always say, ask the cheesemonger. Because that's the guy or girl who's cutting the cheese each day. I often get, what's your favourite cheese? And more often than not, you've cut something that morning and it's a fresh wheel. And it's like every time we cut a new wheel, it's a whole new fresh revelation. So someone's there who's doing all of that. They've got all the experience. They will tell you what's good, what's ready to go. And as I say, I just think variety is nice. But the other side of that, occasionally, I'll find something that I think's really, really stellar. And having said buy little and often, I'll buy a big wedge of it. I'll go home. I'll park myself somewhere comfortable. I'll get out the knife and the board. And I will sit until I'm suitably plump.
And enjoy. Should you have a variety of textures as well? Have a soft cheese, have a hard cheese, that kind of thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a variety of textures and also, partners. What goes well with it? So we've had, we've brought a variety of things along here. We talked about the chocolate, which I think is a bit of fun. Truffle honey, fantastic. We have the yellow box honey from Australia. Pickles. Bread.
Yeah.
Fruit, dried fig. I mean, fig and cheese are fantastic. Fresh fig.
Fig and goat's cheese is a tremendous combination.
Yeah, stellar. I think fig across the board almost with cheeses as well. Even with a blue. Again, blues can be quite astringent. So whether it's the honey or something like fig that gives it that sweet and salty are a really nice combination. And I like something textured. So we've got some nice lavoche flatbreads. Whether it's a nice bit of sourdough bread, purists perhaps just go straight up and have it on their own. I mean, there's a degree here is we all have personal preferences. So it's about going somewhere where you've got choice, a selection, and a selection of things that can go with it. So really, and that's what we hope to do, certainly at Jones, is to come in and say, here's the cheese room, walk in, look around, ask us questions. And actually, we really like to sample.
Yeah.
If you're not sure of it, then one of the keys for me always as a cheesemonger has been sampling to our customers.
Make sure you try it.
Yeah, because if someone says, I don't know that, I don't want them to take home a lump of cheese that they go, ah, you know, it's good. I can see it's good, but it's not really my flavour.
Yeah.
That's too salty for me. That's a bit too strong. By doing that, we can start to judge where your palate or what you enjoy and take you in the right direction. And I say, for me, wherever I buy food, I mean, I always find, buying online to some degree, there's some things that I think it's fantastic. And there's obviously that convenience that's really interesting. But and I think if you trust your cheesemonger, there's obviously also that relationship. But I like to go and poke and sniff and smell. And certainly it's one of the food trends that's come up, I know, for 2018. It's about tactile food.
You want to feel it, you want to understand it. Angie says, great show, really interesting. When you talk about eating cheese with fruit, is that literally all you eat or do you pat it out with a few crackers and bread? Go for your life, Angie. Get that crack out. The crackers and bread, put it all out there and enjoy all of it. As the panel has been saying, it's really all about your personal preference. Put it all together, do what you love, what tastes good. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Such a fascinating discussion. I've learned a lot. We all love cheese, but we can always learn more about it. Roger Longman, artisan cheesemaker at White Lake Cheese, thank you so much. You've got to come back, Roger. It was a brilliant discussion. Thank you. Oliver Sutton, retail manager and cheesemonger at Joins the Grocer. Really brilliant. Thank you, Oliver. Appreciate it. And Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker at Dina Dairy Organic Farms. We'll be seeing you at the markets. Thank you so much, Carla. We have loved the discussion today. Thank you to everybody who participated.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.